Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the July 10th edition of the County Chronicle, and again we'll start with the first page stories. Tuscola City Council. Ford moving east, city to take Pettit Building by David Porter. Mayor Dan Kleiss on Monday announced that Ford of Tuscola plans to build a new facility near Love's Travel Center. He said it has been in the planning stage for a while. City Administrator Drew Hole said the company isn't ready to reveal drawings for the new facility, but Kleiss said the city is working with them and wants to show its support. Hole noted that the company currently leases the building on South Line Road. Property records show that several of the lots are owned by Tim Mooney, who previously owned the dealership. No action was taken by the city on the development. The city council did vote on another property. They will be taking possession of the former Christian church, later Pettit Place Gymnastics, at 307 South Court Street in lieu of enforcement action. The property has become run down over the past several years, and the city initiated steps to have the property declared unsafe. Hole said the owner inherited the building from her deceased daughter and does not have the means to bring it up to code. He said the city inspector estimated that it would take as much as $700,000 to restore it. City Attorney Andrew Baquette said that he is faced with taking the best of a lot of a bad options. He said the city could continue with enforcement proceedings, but that such court cases can take years to resolve, with the likely outcome that the city would receive the building. Hole said that if people cannot afford to fix their properties or pay their property taxes, they probably can't afford to pay any fines ordered by the court. Baquette said fines could also be discharged through bankruptcy, so going through the court would cost the city a lot of money with no better outcome. You can spend years and a lot of money to get where you are now, he said. Hole said the 2022 taxes have been sold due to delinquency. Hole said the city approached the owner and asked if she would be willing to deed the property to the city, and she was grateful, he said. He said the city would need to seek bids for demolition of the building. He said he received a rough estimate from a contractor that it would cost about twice what the city spent to demolish the former Presbyterian church, formerly Castle Mall. That property cost about $75,000 to raise. In other business, Hole announced the city received formal loan approval from the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency, IEPA. The $1.3 million loan will be used to replace water mains in Meadowview Subdivision and a master meter on Route 45 for the water system. Hole noted that the city also received a grant for the water main project. Half of the EPA loan will be forgiven, Hole said, so the city will spend $1.8 million and will pay back about $650,000 over 20 years at 1.3% interest. We take all that we can get, said Hole. Hole said the water main project has been bid and he hopes work will start in a month or so. We had another significant break in the water system last week. He said that he hopes the pipes will be laid before winter, but that cleanup and reseeding will probably take place next spring. Kleiss asked for patience for Meadowview residents. He said it would be a mess for a while, but it will be better in the end. The council also held public hearings for its appropriations budget Monday night and approved the appropriations ordinance after there was no public input. Also Monday, the council approved a $22,000 change order for the Swingler construction for work at the police station, which is to replace two deteriorated steel beams and associated concrete work. Approved two community building leases with alcohol, one for Brooke and Bryce von Lanken for a wedding reception July 20th, and one for Friends of the NRA for a banquet July 28th. Approved a revised amount on a 2024 Ford F-450 from Ford of Tuscola for $53,000, which is $3 higher than previously approved. Approved a change order for an annual oil and chip with reduction of $630. Approved the resignation of Judd Weinke as part-time patrol officer. Weinke has accepted a position as a Champaign County deputy. Also Monday, Kleiss offered his condolences to the family of Nick Flanagan, a former volunteer fireman with the city. He noted that the 4th of July was Flanagan's favorite holiday and that he died on that day. Kleiss also commended the work that went into the annual Sparks in the Park celebration. It takes a lot of people to run these kind of events. In his written report to the council, Hole said Frontier Communications will soon start running fiber optic cable throughout the city. He said a lot of it will be above ground using existing poles. He noted the company has been cooperative in pre-planning measures for the work, so we're hopeful that the project will go smoothly with an attempt to minimize disruptions for landowners, the city, and other utility companies. He said the fire department has started moving into its new station on South Main Street and that an open house is being planned. Arcola City Council approves full-time school resource officer by Ben Crane. In a very short-winded Arcola City Council meeting, 6 minutes to be exact, the council approved four items on the agenda. The council approved Brandy Smith to be the full-time school resource officer and will start on July 8th. The council also awarded Earl Walker Company Incorporated a seal coat maintenance bid for the amount of $166,000. A new ordinance was passed which shifted the lot lines where the Broom Palace is being constructed, as previously discussed. The ordinance is essentially a new parcel which defines where the Broom Palace is actually being built versus where it was originally planned to be built on the lot. Finally, Resolution 24R7 was approved, which is a request for the temporary closure of Route 133 for the Broom Corn Festival Parade from the Department of Transportation. There were no committee reports at the meeting. The Arcola School Board Committee Votes to Switch Banks by Ben Crane. The Arcola School Board Finance Committee has decided to switch their loyalty to First Mid from the People's Bank of Arcola after brief deliberations amongst the committee. The district has worked with People's Bank, formerly the First Bank of Arcola, for almost over 50 years, according to Superintendent Tom Mulligan. Mulligan had documents ready to share and deliberate for the board members to discuss during the meeting. What it came down to for the board were the interest rates of each bank. First Bank had offered a 3.5% interest rate, or 4.5% if the district had 80% of their funds in the bank, while First Mid offered a flat 4.5% interest rate. Mulligan shared different scenarios, assuming the board averaged $10 million monthly, which showed that with 20% of their funds in First Mid and 80% in the IIIT, the district would receive $42,900 in interest monthly, or $515,000 annually. The Illinois Trust, or the IIIT, has an interest rate of 5.32%. Conversely, with 20% in First Bank and 80% in the IIIT, the school district would receive $41,000 monthly, or $495,000 annually, about a $220,000 difference. As of June 30th, the district has $13,500 in cash with $3,097,000 in debt certificates, which makes the current fund balance of $10,400,000. Their funds are invested at 73.9%, or $7,693,000 at First Bank, and 26.07%, or $2,712,000 at IIT. There was one question that lingered amongst the committee. How important is it for the board to keep their money local? Well, with their merge, it's not really local anymore, said board member Jeremy Schonkweiler. The board unanimously agreed to go along with the switch, despite reservations. If you ever think we're going to move, now is the time to do it, said board member Sue Stout. I hate to, but we have to. Aforementioned, the district currently has about $13 million in cash, which is up $1.2 million from 1 year ago when the district had $12,285,000 in cash. These are pretty solid numbers in terms of budget, said Mulligan. The district stayed under budget most of their major categories, with secure funding for capital funding projects such as renovations to a bathroom, the roof, and the high school gym locker rooms. The district was able to exceed their own expectations. In addition, the district borrowed from itself to pay for renovations. While the education fund cannot be used directly for renovation, the district was able to borrow from the fund for capital improvements, so the principal and interest being paid goes back into the education fund. This budget picture is way better than what we were looking at 3 or 4 months ago, said Mulligan. The board will seek to approve the fiscal year 25 budget as well as bank switch at the next open board meeting. Newman City Council approves repainting of City Water Tower by Ben Crane. The Newman City Council approved the repainting of the water tower Monday evening, which is slated to happen the week of July 22nd, as a specific date has not been chosen at this time. After approving the treasurer's report and unpaid bills, Matthew Rideout gave the water project report, saying that the iron filters were installed the same day. Per Environmental Protection Agency guidelines, the sign was required to be posted outside the facility. However, after the sign was installed by the city, it was stolen, which cost the city $250. Trampas Keys gave the city an alley report noting a few issues in and around the Newman baseball diamonds. Keys said received bids for a new gate, which he accepted for a sum of $850. Keyes was concerned that he had overstepped the council when taking the bid. However, the council said no problem, as the other bid was unreasonable. Rideout gave the waterworks report as well, stating that three containment and two scales were installed, and it cost the city $9,850. Finally, Andy Hoffland gave the council notice of the EPA loan project reimbursement, which would be in the amount of $63,000. He said the money should not be expected to be seen for another 45 to 60 days. The Arthur Village Board. Board addresses poison hemlock concerns by Ariana Cherry. There have been public concerns regarding the poison hemlock that's been growing along the drainage ditch that passes through the corporate limits of Arthur. Village Board President Rod Randall stated that he had recently met with Arthur Park District to address the concerns about the hemlock. Although the area had been sprayed to control the overgrowth this past spring, it was agreed that there needed to be a multi-year plan to contract a professional service who's familiar with dealing with the plant. Everybody was on board, and they will do what they can to get this all into action, stated Randall. He also stated that Grant Coram of Public Works has been trying to get in contact with the Department of Agriculture so the village can get advice about licensed contractors and safe methods on removing the existing hemlock. The drainage districts will contact the village prior to any spraying that will be done so that the public will be notified. Furthermore, members expressed their appreciation to all involved in the successful Freedom Celebration. Police Chief Michael Goodman commended his officers for their exceptional performance, ensuring the parade and fireworks proceeded without major incidents, as they have consistently done year after year. Chief Goodman also shared a positive letter received from a command officer of a large agency, commenting on two Arthur officers for their exemplary handling of a situation during the fireworks display. It highlighted their professional and outstanding conduct under challenging circumstances. Angie Parsons, representing Simply Arthur, reported that the registry has recorded 26,000 visitors since January. Based on past records, they estimate that Arthur will welcome approximately 211,000 visitors by the end of the year. This estimate includes those who came into town during the Freedom Celebration. Other items discussed during the meeting included a resolution amending the Village of Arthur's personal policy manual by adding Section 2.13 regarding compensation for public works certification was approved. Resolution 07-01B 2024 was also approved. It amended the Village of Arthur's personnel policy manual in Section 3.2 in regards to personal days. The status of two part-time public work employees was approved to be changed to full-time, and expenditures in the amount of $28,600 were approved. Finally, Randall informed board members that a meeting of the Arthur Association of Commerce was held to help regroup and create a board of directors, understand more clearly the main focus and goals of the organization, schedule meetings, and find ways to better communicate with the public, local businesses, and other organizations involved in the economic development of the Arthur area. In the last first page article, Benefit for April Dick set for Saturday, July 20th by Doris Elmore. April McMillan Dick of Atwood is recently diagnosed with an aggressive form of stage 3 colon cancer. She'll be making trips every other week to Barnes Hospital in St. Louis for treatment, meaning she'll be doing a lot of traveling and will be off work for an indefinite time. To help April out during this time, the First Baptist Church of Atwood, located at 231 North Illinois Street, Atwood, is sponsoring a benefit on Saturday, July 20th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the church. The church is inviting the Atwood community and surrounding areas to come together and make this a spectacular event to assist April. There will be a build-your-own taco bar with all the food donated by Los Gallos, downtown Arthur. A silent auction and bake sale will also take place. If anyone would like to donate a silent auction or bake sale item for the event, please contact Jesse Yoder, 217-246-5494, or Jaime Chavez, 217-714-8251. Also available are t-shirts and bracelets available for sale anytime, beginning now with April's Angel logo. All proceeds will go directly to April to help with the cost of medical care and expenses while she's off work and undergoing treatment. The meal and bake sale are donation-based. An account has been established at the First National Bank of Atwood, GoFundMe page for directions, and a Facebook page to follow April's journey to recovery. April needs the Baptist Church and community to come together and help her out with donations and support while she fights this disease. And we'll move now to the obituaries. Mary Lou B., 94, of Tuscola, passed away peacefully on Thursday evening, July 4th, 2024, at the Tuscola Health Care Center in Tuscola. Graveside services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, July 11th, at the Keene's Chapel Cemetery, rural Laclede. No visitation will be held. Hilligoth Schrader Funeral Home is entrusted with the arrangements. Karen R. Daly, 85, of Arthur, passed away at 9:38 a.m. Tuesday, July 2nd, 2024, at Odd Fellows Rebecca Home in Mattoon. Visitation was held Sunday, July 7th at the Edwards Funeral Home in Arcola. Visitation was also held at St. Paul's Evangelical Lutheran Church prior to the funeral. Funeral services were held Monday, July 8th at St. Paul's Evangelical Lutheran Church, Mattoon. The Reverend Daniel Ulrich officiated. Burial was in the Pleasant Grove Cemetery, Cook Mills. Madonna Thomas. It is with deep sadness that we announce the passing of our beloved mother, Madonna Jean Hutchison Thomas, walked her last million miles on Tuesday, June 25th, 2024, at the age of 92. A graveside funeral services will be held on Saturday, July 13th at 10 a.m. at Broadus Cemetery, rural Tuscola. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that donations be made to the Douglas County Animal Shelter or Donor's Choice in memory of Madonna Thomas. Roger Lee Harshberger, 71, of Atwood, passed away peacefully on Monday, July 1st, 2024, surrounded by his loving family. Funeral services were held Saturday, July 6th at the Hilligosh Schrader Funeral Home, Atwood. Burial followed at the Lake Fork Cemetery, rural Atwood. Visitation was held Friday, July 5th at the funeral home. Roberta Garza Barcera, 65, of Arcola, passed away at 12:36 a.m. on Friday, June 28th, 2024, at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center. Massive Christian burial was held Wednesday, July 3rd at St. John the Baptist Catholic Church in Arcola. Father Juan Carlos Ruiz officiated. Burial followed in the Arcola Cemetery. Visitation was held Tuesday, July 2nd at the Edwards Funeral Home, Arcola. Nick W. Flanagan, 68, of Tuscola, passed away on Thursday morning at the Tuscola Health Care Center, Tuscola. Massive Christian burial was held Monday, July 8th at the 40 Martyrs Catholic Church, Tuscola, with Father Varghese Puthusari officiating. Burial followed at the Tuscola Township Cemetery. A rosary recited Sunday, July 2nd, 7th at the Hilligoss Schrader Funeral Home, Tuscola. Visitation was held at the funeral home on Sunday. Donald Mass, 63, of Arcola, passed away at 5:41 p.m. on Tuesday, July 2nd, 2024, at his residence. A celebration of Donnie's life will be held at 1 p.m. on Friday, July 19th, at Penn Station in Arthur. Pastor Daryl Helmuth will officiate. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. Here's another article, Battling the Invisible Foes, Stealth Pathogens, and Lyme Disease, by Dr. Bill Hemmer. It was a warm, sunny afternoon when Sarah noticed a small tick embedded in her skin a couple of days after a hike through the woods. Unbeknownst to her, this tiny bite would change her life. Within weeks, she was grappling with fatigue, joint pain, and a mysterious rash that seemed to spread across her body. This is Sarah's story, a story shared by thousands of others battling Lyme disease and the stealth pathogens that complicate their lives. Sarah first noticed a red expanding bullseye rash, erythema migrans, one of the hallmark signs of Lyme disease. Soon after, she experienced fever, chills, headache, fatigue, muscle and joint aches, and swollen lymph nodes. These symptoms mirrored those of thousands of others who find themselves suddenly incapacitated by this insidious disease. Keep in mind, not everyone who has an active Lyme disease notices a rash because the bite is on the scalp or an unnoticeable spot on the body, or an individual does not present a rash at all. Stealth pathogens, including Lyme disease, present a range of symptoms that can significantly impact an individual's quality of life. Skin rash can be accompanied by a fever and swollen lymph nodes, indicating an active infection. Fatigue and headache are common, making daily activities challenging and reducing overall energy levels. Muscle and joint pain are also prevalent, causing discomfort and limiting mobility. Patients often experience chills, adding to the overall feeling of malaise. More severe cases can lead to nausea and vomiting, further complicating the patient's condition. Neurological symptoms, such as cognitive decline and difficulty concentrating, can manifest, sometimes leading to long-term cognitive issues. Infection issues and difficulty of breathing are a serious complication that may arise, requiring immediate medical attention. If you find a tick attached to your skin, remove it promptly using fine-tipped tweezers. Grasp the tick as close to the skin surface as possible and pull upward with a steady, even pressure. After removing the tick, clean the bite area and your hands with rubbing alcohol or soap and water. In February 2024, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, reported a staggering 70% increase in Lyme disease cases in 2022, reaching over 62,000. Lyme disease, caused by Borrelia burgdorferi, is transmitted through the bite of infected black-legged ticks. Lyme disease cases are increasing. Over the past few decades, there's been a noticeable rise in the number of reported cases of Lyme disease in the United States. Several factors contribute to this increase, including changes in climate, land use, and expansion of tick habitats. The increase in Lyme disease cases is not uniform across the United States. The northeastern and mid-Atlantic and north-central states have seen the most significant increases. New areas, particularly in the Midwest, are also reporting higher numbers of cases as the black-legged tick expands its range. Understanding where you live and the type of ticks prevalent in your area can significantly impact your risk of contracting Lyme disease. The bacteria that cause Lyme disease in the United States, Borrelia burgdorferia, and rarely B. meionellii, are spread to people through the bites of infected ticks. Although Lyme disease infections were close to 63,000 in 2022, the CDC estimates that the number of people who have contracted the often hard-to-diagnose illness could be as much as 10 times higher than reported cases. In the Midwest, particularly in the north-central United States, the black-legged tick, also known as the deer tick, Ioxys scapularis, is the primary vector for Lyme disease. Such as Wisconsin, Minnesota, and parts of Illinois, Indiana, and Michigan are known areas where these ticks are prevalent. The percentage of ticks infected with Borrelia burgdorferia can vary widely, with some areas reporting infection rates of over 50%. The black-legged deer tick, also known simply as the deer tick, is commonly found in the Midwest and eastern United States, particularly in the upper New England, mid-Atlantic, and upper Midwest regions. Time of year. Deer ticks are active year-round, but most commonly encountered from late spring through early fall. Nymphs are particularly active in the late spring and summer, while adults are more commonly seen in the fall and early spring. Physical traits. Female deer ticks have a reddish-brown, orange body with a distinctive black scutum. The body is oval-shaped and appears slightly flatter when unfed. Adult females are approximately 3 to 5 millimeters long when unfed, but can expand up to 10 millimeters when engorged with blood. Diseases. The deer tick is a primary vector for several diseases, including Lyme disease, caused by Borrelia burgdorferia, anaplasmosis, caused by Anaplasma phagocytophilum, babesiosis, caused by Basibia microbi, and Powassan virus. Keep the tick and get it tested. If you are bitten by a tick, we recommend getting the tick tested immediately. Time is of the essence. Medical treatment. First line of defense is antibiotics. A single dose of doxycycline taken within 72 hours of the bite can manage Lyme disease. For active cases of Lyme disease, a course of antibiotics is typically given for 2 to 4 weeks, then performing a stealth pathogen supplement and herbal plan is highly recommended. Prevention strategies. Preventing Lyme disease involves a combination of avoiding tick bites and promptly removing any ticks you find. Here are some practical tips. Avoid tick-infested areas, especially during peak tick season in the spring and summer. Use tick repellents. Apply insect repellent on exposed skin and clothing. Wear protective clothing. Long sleeves, pants, and closed-toed shoes can help reduce skin exposure. Perform tick tests. After spending time outdoors, check your body for ticks and remove them immediately. Shower after outdoor activities. Showering within 2 hours of coming indoors can help wash off unattached ticks. Next article, new art exhibit at the Vault, Tuscola. Two stalwarts of the Champaign-Urbana art scene will be featured in a new show that runs from July 6th to July 27th at the Vault Art Gallery in downtown Tuscola. The opening takes place from 2 to 4 p.m. July 13th. The paintings by Ian Wong and folk art from around the world and collected by Bernard Cesarone are on display and available for purchase at the Vault's Flex Gallery, located on the west side of the building. Wong and Cesarone have long been involved in the art scene in the Champaign-Urbana and Central Illinois. Wong is also on the advisory board at the University of Illinois Spurlock Museum, while Cesarone has his CalArte Gallery in Urbana at the Vault Art Gallery in Tuscola, as well as an online presence. After his career in medical science in China, Wong has followed on the role of art in the community, writing for local publications, along with organizing exhibits and shows to promote the local art scene. He's been on the Spurlock Museum Advisory Board since 1999, serving as president from 2006 to 2008. Wong has also won several awards for his involvement in the Champaign-Urbana area art scene from the Champaign County Arts Council. Cesarone, an academic researcher, has long been fascinated by the world art and how it can lead to better understanding between different cultures and societies. He has spent decades collecting folk art from around the world with an emphasis on works from India and Latin America. Examples of that folk art are available for purchase during the show. Refreshments will be available at the opening along with live acoustic music. The next article, Metcalfe celebrating its 150th birthday, July 20th. The village of Metcalfe will celebrate its sesquicentennial on Saturday, July 20th, with a full day of activities, including local vendors and food trucks. The main event will be the Metcalfe Fireman's Jonah Fish Fry, serving from 4 to 7 p.m. in the Metcalfe Park. After taking a break from holding an annual fish fry 25 years ago, members of the Metcalfe Volunteer Fire Department will bring back the old recipe that everyone loved, including the all-day simmered baked beans and secret recipe coleslaw, to have an old-fashioned all-you-can-eat fish fry. Adult meals include fish, two sides, bread and butter, a drink, and ice cream. As an added bonus this year, Longview Bank will be sponsoring free ice cream for dessert. Before the fish fry begins, there'll be a parade at 3 p.m. The parade route will run south from the Oceano to Ocean Road down Central Street to the post office. Parade lineup begins at 2:30 on the Ocean to Ocean Road north of Metcalfe. Come show off your float, tractor, fire truck, or special group. For more information about the parade, call Chandra 217-202-4843. After the meal, the Logan Kirby Band will put on a free concert in the park from 7 to 9 p.m. As the band plays tunes ranging from country songs to Elvis hits, everyone will enjoy themselves as they sing and dance the night away. Don't forget your lawn chairs. Other events being held to celebrate Metcalfe's 150th anniversary are Bingo in the Park from 4 to 7 p.m., a car show from 12 noon to 3 p.m., and a 50-50 raffle with drawing at 8 p.m. You do not need to be present to win. For questions about the celebration events, call 217-251-5190. In addition, an all-day historical display about Metcalfe and Young American High School, which will be set up in the community building to help tell the story of our resilient town and recall those favorite memories. Currently, we're looking for old items and photographs to showcase for our historical display. Please call Nancy 217-497-9180 to arrange getting your memorabilia on display. Governor Oglesby's 200th birthday to be celebrated with a fundraiser. The Governor Oglesby Mansion Board of Directors created a 200 Club to allow the community a way to honor the governor during the month of July. The governor's 200th birthday is July 25th. The community is involved to join the 200 Club with donations in his honor. For more information, call 217-791-1385 or visit the Governor Oglesby Mansion Facebook page. Regular July open houses are every Wednesday except July 24th and Saturday from 2 to 4 p.m. and Sunday, July 28th from 2 to 4 p.m. The mansion is located at 421 West William Street, Decatur. An article, Summer Cookout Costs Hit Record High, Illinois Costs Down on Several Key Items, by Tammy Sloop, Farm Week. The cost of a summer cookout continues to climb with inflation and supply chain disruptions driving grocery store prices. American Farm Bureau Federation's annual Market Basket Survey reported an Independence Day cookout will cost $71.22 for 10 guests this year, a 5% jump from last year at $7.12 per person. The cost rose nearly 30% from 5 years ago and is a record high since AFBF began the survey in 2013. Cookout favorites include a dozen items such as cheeseburgers, chicken breasts, pork chops, homemade potato salad, strawberries and ice cream, among other products. As families and friends gather to celebrate the 4th of July, this survey is a reminder that inflation continues to strain our wallets. Farmers are no exception to this. We often shop at the same grocery store as our neighbors and friends. But in addition to higher food costs, we're also feeling the pressure of increased production expenses. Illinois Farm Bureau President Brian Duncan said, "The price of fuel, fertilizer, and other necessary inputs that are used to grow America's food supply have all gone up in recent years. Ground beef and lemon saw the highest price increases, while prices dropped for chicken breasts and potato salad. The retail price for 2 pounds of ground beef increased 11% to $12.77. Lemonade will cost $4.19, up 12% from 2023. AFBE economist Bert Nelson said constricting cattle supplies, drought, and citrus greening disease are driving these increases. And that is all we have time for today, this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye and see you again next week.